Good Thursday morning to you. It is spring break in Florida's capital city, and people are able to get from one end of town to the other in less than half an hour. Ain't life grand? Well, anyway, this is our special spring break edition of WFSU's Perspectives. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the Twitter machine, the email device, and the many other ways we have to communicate with one another nowadays. And you're always invited to be part of the conversation at 414-1234, our local number. It's 800-926-8809 if long distance twixt you and us. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. As we said at the outset before Ron's news, just having an animal around has multiple benefits from a psychological and even physiological component. You can feel the tension of the day drain away. You can feel the blood pressure go down. The alpha waves take over the synapses, and everything seems right with the world when your furry friend is around, right? Well, it looks like there's far beyond just that nice anecdotal feel. There's some hard research and experiential backup for that kind of thing. We're going to talk about that today on Perspectives, because we have some folks who have done some research into this, and we have some people who every day have an animal therapy program that has loads of benefits, not only for our four-legged friends, but also for the people that they interact with. And let's meet those folks right now. We start off with Dr. Natalie Sachs-Erickson with the Florida State University Department of Psychology. Now, along with Dr. Don Carr from the Soc Department at FSU, you folks were instrumental in the Health and Retirement Survey, a long-term study of more than 20,000 people aged 50 and older. And part of that study asked the participants about their pets back in 2012, right, Doctor?
That's exactly right. We saw a call for research grant from the Gerontological Society of America, excuse me, in cooperation with Waltham and Mars Pet Care, and we applied for a grant, and we received it, and we're very interested in looking at what the long-term influences of companion animals on the health of older adults.
That is wonderful. I can't wait to get into some of the nuts and bolts of that as we go on. But we also talked about on-the-ground actual interaction between people and animals, and we have some experts in that regard, too, from the Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare's Celebrated Animal Therapy Program. We have Stephanie Perkins. Hey, Steph, good to see you.
Hey, Tom, good to see you, too.
And Heather Ganey is also here with us, guys. So let's give folks a little background on, number one, why the TMH Animal Therapy Program has now been nationally recognized. What was up with that? How did that occur?
Well, our program is really wide-reaching. So we don't only serve the hospital, we serve the community as a whole. So we have a court program where the dogs go into the courthouse to support victims of violent offenses. Also, we go into schools for the READ program and libraries to help struggling readers.
Okay. And the other thing that you do is have what? How many, Heather, do you have? Critters and the range of critters? We think of therapy dogs, but you guys go well beyond that too, right?
Sure. We have about 150 teams currently, and we have about six different species. So dogs, cats, parrots, dwarf mini horses, a goat, and bunnies as well.
A goat?
Yes.
I can't imagine. They're usually kind of hyper and they're all over the place. And how can people relate to a goat?
They are very much like dogs. They're just as affiliative. And a lot of people grew up on farms, so they can really relate to those kind of animals when they visit.
That is terrific. Well, let's talk to Dr. Sachs-Erickson here, though, about the study that was done. And what were some of the questions that were asked regarding people and their companion animals, Doctor?
Well, let me step back a little bit and say that there is a lot of hard science that shows that companion animals have a very strong influence on the health and the psychological functioning of people of all ages. However, it's not 100% consistent. In fact, there is a lot of inconsistent results, where some studies are finding very strong results, positive results, several well-done studies seem to find negative results, like people who have companion animals are more depressed than people who don't. And so because of this confusion, that was one of the goals of our study, is to try to understand what's happening. And so the very first thing that we're looking at is something that we call in research the selection process. Let's say you're a little lonely, you're a little sad, you don't have too many friends, and you think, maybe I'll get a companion animal. Maybe you have some health problems, so you feel you can't take care of a dog, so you decide to have a cat. And then there are a lot of people like that that go ahead and get a cat, and then there's those who don't. And then if you do an epidemiological study of the population, you find, look, cat owners tend to have more health problems and are lonelier than people without cats. And then you say, look, cats cause depression and health problems. But what people don't understand, or what we haven't shown yet in science, is that people who might have those problems select having a companion animal. And so the people with problems are more likely to select having those animals. So that's the first part that we're trying to sort out. What's the cause and what's the effect? If that person gets a cat, at that point, how much does that cat help and improve their life situation? And that's what we're trying to do. Step one, understand what are the selection variables. And then once we understand those selection variables, how can we control them doing long-term research to really understand the true influence of companion animals on older adults?
Is there any indicator that people maybe project their negative situation, their depression or whatever else, onto the animal, and that's part of the selection process? Because we know cats are kind of, they can be standoffish, a little bit removed emotionally from folks. And so you would pick something that kind of, I don't know, reinforces your worst instincts or whatever?
Well, I don't know about that. I think that generally the animals bring out maybe the best in people, that even though they're people who might have problems with closeness and intimacy, sort of find a way to fulfill some of the need for intimacy that we all have through their companion animals, who are much more accepting and loving and less conditional than maybe humans are.
All right. Well, that gets us into the scientific realm. But on the ground then, Stephanie and Heather, what do you guys find when you go into, whether it's over at the rehab center or you were talking about the situation with the reading program and all of that? Give us a couple of success stories from the animal therapy program there. Well, Stephanie?
Generally, we get smiles and engagement from people. Some of the best success stories have been with rehab patients who are long-term rehab patients. They've worked with one of our teams for a very long time and have gone from not wanting to do their therapy to being very successful and moving back into their normal life.
How do you train an animal to do that, to kind of reinforce the good stuff, the outcomes that you want to achieve there?
I don't think it's really a trained behavior. I think it's more of an innate behavior that they have. They instinctually know the people that need them. And also the handler helps with that too, because the handler has to be really in tune with their animal when they're visiting. And so watching that relationship between the handler and animal also helps engage the patient as well.
Okay. This theory of empathy, though, that animals somehow, it's like a psychic connection. They know when you're happy. They know when you're sad. They kind of know what to do to help you when you're feeling like that. Heather, is that for real?
It totally is. I think they're really picking up on chemical changes in your body. And like Stephanie said, they're just born with it. Some animals can be better than others, but we can walk into the room and they just hone in on a patient. And I might not know why that is until after our visit's over and the nurse comes and explains a little bit more about that patient's background. But it truly is magic to see your dog work a room and touch people in a way that no one else can.
And medically, there was, I don't know if there's any research on this, maybe you can help out, as this is just purely personal and anecdotal. But when our daughter had cancer. She has two chihuahuas who think they're chocolate labs. They are not your normal, hyper, nervous, flighty kinds of dogs at all. And before her diagnosis, her one dog would come over and put her head down at the site that later turned out to be cancerous. And it was an untypical behavior for her. And is that actually, for real?
Yes, it actually it is. What they're doing and studying is that dogs have a sense of smell that is astronomically greater than humans. And they pick up that scent. And it's a different scent. So the cancer is giving off a scent that dogs can actually recognize. And in some research studies, they've actually trained dogs to detect cancer and have used dogs to scan people's skin to detect cancer.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, just like they sniff drugs at airports
exactly.
and things
exactly.
like that.
Yes.
We would love to hear, as far as our listeners go, if you folks have some interesting stories that you'd like to share, the interaction you have with your animals, either in a therapeutic kind of way or anything else. If you'd like to add to the conversation here, we'd love to hear from you here on Perspectives, because we're talking with Dr. Natalie Sachs-Erickson with the FSU Department of Psychology, involved with a study of older folks when it came to their interaction with animals, and from Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare's Animal Therapy Program, Stephanie Perkins and Heather Ganey are here with us as well. And you are invited to be part of that conversation, too, at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Or if you're at the office and you want to send us an email, that's a great way to communicate, too. Perspectives@WFSU.org is our address on that. And a program reminder as we head towards break, you can always find us online at WFSU.org. Just go to that address, pull down the programs menu from the radio link, and then click on Perspectives. We archive past shows, try to have them up and on the line for you by the close of business day when that program actually airs, so you can go back and listen to it again and again. We'll be right back with more right here on Perspectives. We are back on Perspective, talking animal tales today, but therapeutic kinds of animals. Even our pets can be therapeutic, even though they don't have the certification and the diploma. That's okay. Stephanie Perkins from TMH's Animal Therapy Program. We were talking about dogs sniffing cancer. Now, you got a story on that, too, right?
I do. Actually, my dog and I visit every week with a hospice patient, and my dog was really insistent on sniffing this patient's leg in one spot, kind of up his pant leg, and I had no idea why he was doing that. I thought he was being a little rude. But then eventually he pulled up his pant leg, and my dog sniffed one spot really insistently, and the patient told me that that's where the cancer was.
Oh, my gosh. That still amazes me.
Yes, and we have been able to take some of these special skills of animals and train them, taking their natural gift and train them to help people. For example, I volunteer with a program called Paws with a Cause, and we help train dogs to sense seizures. And they're placed with individuals who have a seizure disorder, and they actually alert to a seizure. Or there are some programs that train dogs to alert that someone's having their insulin level is falling. So dogs have this ability to sense and smell things that other humans don't, and can really help people with these types of health problems.
Diagnostic tools. Well, you brought one of your, should we say, students or trainees?
I did. Besides for being a researcher, I am a volunteer for several programs. One is I volunteer in the TMH program. But I also volunteer with Paws with a Cause. And we have a local person here, Judy Volpe, who runs that program. And I have one of our puppies in training. And the puppy's named Reagan. And she is absolutely adorable. And she is in training this year in a foster family to learn good manners and behave well. And if all goes well, she'll go off to college, to Michigan, and learn how to be a service dog for someone with a disability. And she could be assigned to someone who might be in a wheelchair because they have MS or a spinal cord injury or a traumatic brain injury or someone with a seizure disorder. And we're also placing some of these dogs with autistic children and their family.
Oh, that is terrific. Kurt wants to join the conversation. He's online, too. Let's add him into the mix here on Perspectives. Hey, Kurt.
Good morning
to you.
Yes, Stephanie and I know each other. We even live in the same neighborhood. Hello. I am a physical therapist, and I started working at Tallahassee Memorial Rehab in 2012. And when I first joined there, actually, I kind of thought that the dogs were going to be in the way. But I was wrong. They actually ended up helping rehab quite a bit, and I thought I would make a statement of support.
Terrific. What's your favorite animal story, Kurt? Do you have one?
Probably don't really have a direct animal story. One of the most common things, and I saw it quite often, was patients in significant discomfort and having them respond quite well and being able to focus on their rehab.
Well, that is terrific. Thank you for sharing that. And Stephanie's waving. She says,
yes,
hey.
Hey, Kurt.
I'll probably see you walking in the neighborhood before too long.
Definitely.
I think I'd like to point out that the observation that the doctor made about pain has been found in research studies that when the dogs are working with pain patients, that their levels of reported pain go down and they actually take less medications for pain.
Okay, well, what about the aspect of, and this has been buttressed in a number of studies, I think, if you're dealing with patients who have dementia or some other similar kinds of things, that animals can be helpful in that regard, too, of keeping cognitive skills at least a little bit better energized and that sort of thing.
We've noticed visiting assisted living facilities and nursing homes in particular that it really helps people become engaged and stay engaged. They then go back and reminisce about stories of their past animals, and they're all more connected in the room as well after we leave. A lot more engagement just within their own community after the animals have been there.
Okay, let's go back to the phones, and Dan awaits. Hi, Dan. Welcome to Perspectives. Hello, Dan on line one. There we
I'm
go.
Good.
Hey, yes, sir.
I just wanted to thank Stephanie and Heather and the TMH Animal Program. In case people want to see some of the therapy animals, they're going to be out at a benefit for Leon County Humane Society this weekend at Proctor Subaru called Pets and Their People from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So if any of your listeners want to come down and see some of the animals that are in that program, it's a great opportunity to bring kids down.
That is a terrific thing. Thank you so much for bringing that up, Dan. We even noticed that online just as we were about to kick off the program. Thought, it's the weekend for that. So, and we hope the Humane Society folks will bring along one of their superstars, too. I don't know if you guys have met him yet. Lex, he was the one rescue dog from the Korean meat farm that of which there were four who wound up at the Leon County Humane Society, and they were in foster and they were all adopted out with the exception of Lex as of like a month and a half ago. He was the oldest of the group, 2 years old, so he had been traumatized the most severely, but he had turned into from this emaciated, quivering, just terrified, barely an animal, to this big, goofy, slobbering, wonderful critter that would make someone just a terrific pet. So anyway, we talked a little bit, though, about how you prepare animals for this role. And there's basic training, of course, sit, stay. You want them to be well behaved. But is there anything else, like you were saying for the program here, Natalie, when it comes to any kind of additional training they have to go through to be either, therapy animals, companion animals for people with disabilities. What does that entail?
Well, I think it's important to make the distinction between therapy animals and service dogs. There are other animals besides for dogs that are service dogs, but that's a typical. Therapy animals live with the family or their owner, and it's their pet. And then they come in, example, to this excellent, excellent program at TMH and get evaluated to see if it makes sense for them to become part of the program. And Stephanie can tell you about the careful kinds of screening that goes on. The dog has to be friendly, has to enjoy interacting, has to be sort of intuitive, well-behaved, has to have a really solid temperament. Things happen. Someone can step on the dog, trip. The dog has to be able to handle the stress. And then the owner is there. Is the owner the person who enjoys doing this with their dog and facilitate it? So that's sort of step one. And then we take it even further with the service dogs. These are dogs that have the same qualities, but they also have to have excellent health, good eyesight, good hips, and have a really good, strong temperament because they have to handle severe stress potentially. And they often are fostered in a home for a year or two, and then they go off for advanced training.
All right, but they have some physical stuff that they're going to have to do, so it's not just being lap animals, essentially.
Right. They may have some very strenuous physical job, and that's why it's only fair to select a dog that's healthy, only fair for the animal. You don't want an animal that's working who might have a hip problem, and it's not fair for the person you're placing with the dog. They need a healthy animal who's going to live as long as possible with the person with a disability.
Stephanie, Heather, people stop you on the street and say, oh, you guys need to have my pet as a therapy animal because they're so laid back and empathetic and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely, all the time.
and you take them up on it? I mean, are you recruiting more animal volunteers now or what?
Constantly. So twice a year we hold screenings for our classes. We do classes twice a year as well. So it starts out with the screening process that Natalie was mentioning, where we look at the temperament of the animal, if they know basic obedience, how they are with other people in strange situations, as well as like loud noises, healthcare equipment, and those sorts of things. So initial interest is great. A lot of dogs don't do well in new environments like that. They do great at home. That's one thing to evaluate if the dog is really well socialized.
All right. And getting back to I'm still fascinated being more of a cat than a dog person. How do you get a cat acclimated to this?
It takes a very special type of cat to be okay going into new environments and being touched by people. All of our animals have to be trained on harness and leash, so the cat has to be comfortable on harness as well. Currently, we only have 3 cats in our program. And I think what's special about the cats, too, is a lot of times they utilize a stroller, a pet stroller, to go into the facility so they're not carrying around a cat. And you can't smile looking at a cat strolling down the hospital hallways. It's very cute.
Yeah, that is. But I also know a lady here who has a trained cat named Louie who I think part of the shtick is that she has Louie do all these things, and occasionally Louie will, and other times Louie will just lie down there and look at you and say, yeah, make me.
Typical cat.
We got to give a shout out here to a family by the name of Mitchell and talk about that in regards to the animal therapy program. Would you, Steph?
Absolutely. Chuck and Patty Mitchell have been involved with our program since 2007. They were involved with 2 different dogs, their dog Roscoe and Ricky, and most of our community knows about Ricky. And they have just been instrumental in sort of being the basis for our court program. Chuck has really done amazing things with the legislature, getting laws passed here, allowing the dogs into the courtroom. And Patty has done amazing things with our READ program.
Yeah, and the READ thing, talk about how that works. People who have never seen that in operation have not a clue how that functions.
It is really cool. I'm not really a kid person, but I really love to do the READ program with my dogs. So we go to a school once a week, and we visit with the same 3 children every week. They get to read to the dog for 20 minutes. It's non-judgmental. They aren't corrected by the dog. They just get to read in a free environment and practice and have fun with it. And the dog enjoys it. They get attention. They get relaxation. They also get treats sometimes. And the kids usually by the end of the school year are reading so much better. It's really amazing.
Now, Dr. Natalie, as far as ongoing follow-up to that original 2012 question about the pets for that base of 20,000 folks, is that continuing? You got follow-up going on that?
Yes, we do. And this is the data that we're about to take a look at that we haven't studied yet. So we're just finishing up our first phase where we're looking at these selection factors and understanding them and understanding the statistical processes we need to use. And our next step is we are going to be following people with companion animals and without companion animals over time. And we're looking at people who are particularly vulnerable. Older age brings with it some new challenges. Most people who are older age develop at least one chronic health problem. There's also loss of social network, possibly death of a loved one or a spouse. And so during these stressful life transitions, we want to look over time to see how well in terms of health and psychological functioning do people do going through these types of crises, stressful times, those who have animals and those who do not have companion animals. So that's the next thing that we're going to look at, and perhaps when we have those results, we can come back and share that with you.
Well, that would be wonderful. Can you see this getting to the point of, I guess, medical legitimacy, where an older person might go in for a checkup to the doctor? There are a certain number of indicated symptoms that would then prompt the doctor to say, you know, Mary, what you need is a dog.
You know, that's exactly what we want to be able to do. We want to be able to say, have you considered a companion animal? Why that companion animal may be good for one person but not another? And we also, of course, need to consider the companion animal. Is that animal going to be placed in an environment that's healthy and ethical and humane? So we have all those things to take into consideration so that we can make a good recommendation that this is something for you to seriously consider. Here are the pros. Here's the cons. Having an animal costs money, the food and veterinarian. And whether or not we can make a good scientifically based a statement that it's likely that this companion animal will be helpful to you and in these ways.
And also helpful, of course, to the local animal rescue organizations, too, who are constantly looking for good homes for their critters.
Exactly.
Okay. Patty joins us here on line one. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Patty.
It is so good to hear from you. You heard us talking about you, didn't you?
Well, I didn't, and then I did. I was planning to call in anyway. Tom, I want to tell you that one of the most successful read teams that we ever have had was a mom and a son and a cat. Mm. It was a Humane Society, or actually Animal Shelter, rescue, Sunny Blue, beautiful Himalayan. He was in our program for almost 3 years. He would just sit and listen to these kids practice reading aloud. It was, he was really cool. It was really cool.
That is sweet. Is he still with us now?
No, sadly no. But I did want to tell you that we've had them and we'd welcome them anytime, actually. I think all the animals in our read program right now are dogs. But I just wanted to, just share with folks just how wonderful it is as I'm currently still in the program, even though Ricky has passed. I get to help out as what's called a reading retriever. But when you get to sit down once a week with a young person who's reluctant and struggling with reading, and your dog is right there, so non-judgmental, so calm, so comforting, and, of course, very clean, very quiet. And they just listen. They never snicker or make fun of anybody if they make a mistake. It's like really just like watching a miracle every time you get to go into a read session.
Well, speaking of miracles, Patty Mitchell, you and Chuck have certainly wrought a miracle here in this community by making all of this possible. And you have seen what your beneficence and dedication have wrought over the years. And just a shout out to both you guys. It was a wonderful thing that you have done and continue to do in this community.
Well, that's very sweet of you. We are really part of a very big team and family. So you've got, you know, the two best ones right there in front of you. So anyway, have a good rest of the program, and thanks for talking about our a lot of animal therapy today.
Thanks so much, Patty. All the best to Chuck. We'll see you soon out in the highways and byways of our community. But then again, that's very, I think, emblematic of what it takes for a lot of these programs. Just get a couple of key folks involved and dedicated to making something happen, and boom, strangely wonderful things can occur. Now, if you're just joining us on Perspectives, thank you so much for tuning our way. We're talking about pets and people, especially pets as therapy for those folks, as well as being just wonderful companions. And we'd like to hear your story if you would like to add to the conversation at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. Our guest, Dr. Natalie Sachs Erickson with the FSU Department of Psychology, and from the TMH Animal Therapy Program, Stephanie Perkins and Heather Ganey. Again, we would love to hear from you, so give us a ring here on Perspectives, and we shall be right back in just a few moments. Back on Perspectives, talking about critters and people and all that kind of thing, and especially when it comes to therapy. And Dr. Natalie Sachs Erickson, you collaborated with another Florida State University professor here on this project, right? Let's give a shout out to her.
Absolutely. Dr. Dawn Carr is in the sociology program at FSU, and also affiliated with the Institute for Longevity and Successful Aging. And her area of expertise is on identifying ways to enhance the quality of life among older adults, particularly in terms of social engagement. And when I came to her and asked her, would she like to write this grant with me, she was very excited about the potential for companion animals to be a resource for people who are older, who are socially isolated, and who are going through some stressful life situations. So this really fit into her broader pattern of research looking at social functioning of older adults.
Yeah, because it is so often now, because of the longevity that we're seeing, that you will wind up very possibly alone at some point. And we move away from our hometowns and you become isolated. And so this would seem to be a critical need.
Exactly. People who are older adults are at high risk for social isolation. And there are many different ways that we can try to work to decrease that and enhance the quality of life. And this may be one way that might be extremely helpful. It's not only the relationship with the animal, which can be awesome, but also we found that when people walk their dogs, people are friendlier. They come up, they say hello. It starts conversations. So it's also a social facilitator.
Again, purely anecdotal, but back many, many years ago in my young and foolish days, I found that when I walked I had a cat who would drape across my shoulders. And we would go for long walks. And I was not married at the time. I found that he was a wonderful attraction for young ladies to come up and start a conversation. So it works.
Well, just for all you young men out there, or not so young men out there who would like to attract someone, just know that research has shown that ratings of attractiveness of males increase if they're with a companion animal or with their dog. So if you would like to increase your attractiveness, there's many different ways, and one way is to walk a dog.
Okay, and Stephanie and Heather, I'm sure that you can realize the therapeutic advantages therein, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I walk down the hall and I'll smile and say hello, but it's totally different when I have my therapy dog with me. I'll stop and have, you know, meaningful conversations and usually get some patient requests, go visit some rooms after that. It's totally different.
Yeah, you get invited out for dinner, you know, all kinds of things here. Let's say hey to Judy. Judy's on the line here on Perspectives. Hi, Judy. Hello.
Hey there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that was Roscoe in the background.
Hi, Roscoe.
that's all it takes.
Hey, Roscoe.
I want to compliment Stephanie and Heather on doing a fabulous job in managing this program. They managed to keep track of where everybody's going and what they're doing. And Roscoe is one of the dogs, and he goes to the TMH Rehab Center quite often. And people know him there, so he has his friends there. And when he walks into the room, people smile, hey, there's Roscoe, hey, there's Roscoe. And we have a hard time getting through the whole building, you know, in our allotted time. Well, everybody smiles. And it's great. And a lot of times it takes their mind off what sometimes painful therapy they're working at to get better and get released. So it's always a positive situation.
And there's something in it, obviously, for Roscoe, too, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He has his friends. So, I mean, he sees them. He has to go over and say hi. Some of the patients that have been there a while, he has to go see that he knows. And the staff, of course, has to get their pets in. Another thing, at the cancer center, he has his regulars at the cancer center he sees. So it's a win-win for everybody.
That is terrific. Thanks for sharing that, Judy. And Roscoe, you keep doing a great job, okay?
He had to say hi.
Good boy, Roscoe. Thanks, Judy. Really appreciate that. I had heard another story. This is about, I think it was in Minnesota, an assisted living facility that has a cat that visits, makes the rounds every single day. And if the cat camps out in a room for a protracted period of time, that's an indicator to staff that resident is about to depart. Is that true?
I've heard that same story. I don't know if it's true, but I've heard it.
Okay.
I've heard the story, too. I don't know whether it's true.
I don't know, but it's...
It actually wouldn't surprise me.
And again, that the sensitivity to the... Right. There is something going on here, and the animal just locks in on it. Mm-hmm. And it's a comfort for the patient as well. It's not a fearful thing that, oh, my God, the cat's here. I'm doomed. You know,
it's... I think anybody can relate to that. If you have pets at home and you're having a bad day or you're not feeling well, you can notice your cat or dog stick a little bit closer to you. I've personally experienced that and know others that have as well.
Yeah, they're exactly the opposite of people who usually will flee in your
exactly.
hour of need. But
exactly.
The animal empathizes and knows, oh, you need some help. I'm going to be here for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so comforting. Let's check in with Mac, who's online too. Hi, Mac. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hello, Mac Barfield. How are you today, sir? I love the program. You're doing a great job up there. Betsy, my wife and our sustainers with WFSU, great show. I listen to all of them all the time. Chuck and Patty Mitchell, they were over at the house the other night looking at pictures. My wife's a professional photographer. So they come over and got pictures of Ricky. And, you know, it was just emotional to sit there with these two on the back porch enjoying those two people and what they do for our community. And it's not just our community. It's United States-wide. It's probably going to be worldwide before long. But just to give a shout-out to Chuck and Patty Mitchell, they're two of the finest people out there.
Oh, Mac, you are so sweet. Thank you so much for the kind words and for the shout-out to these great folks in our community who have done so much. We got an email here from Kathy. She'd like to know, guys, if it's possible for someone to learn to take someone else's therapy animal to people who need them. I see Stephanie and Heather going, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. You can definitely borrow someone's animal. You just have to have signed permission.
Okay, and you just check in, and that's another thing people want to know, how to contact you guys, because let's face it, Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare has one of the most gigantic websites on the planet. There are links to everywhere and everything, but if you just type in or Google Tallahassee Memorial Animal Therapy, you're get through to you guys or what?
I believe so. If not, you can do tmh.org/animal therapy, all one word, and you'll find us.
Okay, and so it's sort of like a lending program then, sort of
yes.
like a library. Yeah, a critter library. What is next, Dr. Natalie? Where we go from here? The follow-up you talked about here with that ongoing study that inquired about people and their companion animals back in 2012. And will that be expanded then into some other areas do you see happening? It's all, of course, driven by money. You got to have the grant to do this stuff.
Well, the next step after what I've already laid out is that we really want to understand the mechanisms, what it is that facilitates between a companion animal and an older adult having a better time of it. What are the mechanisms? Is it the social contact? Does it change parameters biologically, like oxytocin and serotonin? Does it increase their social interaction with others? What are the mechanisms of change? And then how can we take what we understand and put it within a scientific theory? We're thinking possibly a biopsychosocial theory to understand how animals enhance the lives of older adults.
But does that detract from the magic? We have heard that word bandied about here today, that this connection between people and animals is like on an ethereal plane. How could you apply the cold, hard dictates of research to that?
Well, you know, I don't think we have to give up the magic if we try to better understand what it is that is mostly facilitating these kinds of benefits. Because once we better understand them, we can go right to the things that work and know for whom and under what situations they work.
Not leaving so much to chance.
Exactly.
Okay. Heather and Stephanie, are there any downsides? Are there people who interaction with animals has caused them to, decline, react negatively? Or is it always good all the time?
It's not always good. Sometimes it brings up bad memories for people. And sometimes people can have allergies or fear of animals. So that's not always a positive if we come in the room.
Yeah, the allergy thing. I can relate. Okay. Mm-hmm. We had that problem at my house there. We had, the cat that adopted us would have been a great therapy animal. She was the most laid back thing on the planet. So anyway, are you looking to expand beyond the six species? Are there any other animals that might make good therapy creatures?
Absolutely. Any domesticated animal is allowed in our program.
We would love to get a pig. If anybody has
a pig
out
yes.
there, please contact us.
Oh, okay. But they get big. It can even the so-called pygmy pigs. I heard that's sort of like a scam that, you know, you get this little tiny cute as a button piglet and they say, "Oh, it'll remain tiny all the time," and it doesn't. It gets to be like 600 pounds and huge.
Well, we've brought 1,500-pound horses before mm-hmm. to rehab, so I don't see why a pig would be an issue.
Yeah, and that former mule that you guys had out there, that weighed, it looked like about a ton, mm-hmm. which was massive. So, but we have now such a multiplicity of creatures that we have as companion animals.
Yes, I think it's important to note that something as quiet as an aquarium put in a facility with patients with Alzheimer's has shown a lot of improvement among the patients. So when you think big, like pigs, you could also think about other ways to integrate animals into the lives of people who are older and may need more social connection.
Yeah, and it's visually, there's few things more enchanting than an aquarium, just watching the fish, and you can, again, feel the tension of the day and the blood pressure go down and everything else, and that could be good, too. I remember as a kid, even had ants, but I don't know if that, you know.
They have some finch populations in assisted living facilities, a lot of places here in Tallahassee.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And to find out more, though, about the research, though, let's do on to that, Dr. Natalie. If people are really enchanted and entranced by what you say here and they want to find out more about this study, how do they do that?
Well, perhaps we can put a link up online to our study on your website.
Okay, and I see Bill Edmonds back there. There we go. Bill, you just get me that URL, and we'll go ahead and make sure that that is connected to the online version of this Perspectives program. And we'll already have a link here for the Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare Animal Therapy Program. Do you guys look to expand that beyond? You have the kids reading program. You have now animals going to court, which is just so cool, too. And that's a connection through the Guardian Ad Litem program, I believe?
Actually, through the state attorney's office.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay.
The Second Circuit.
And that has a great deal of efficacy as far as reducing the nervousness and the trauma for young people who have to face sometimes a very cold, hard process, which no one tries to make it that way, but that's just the nature of it.
It is, unfortunately. It really does help the children on their path to healing when they have a dog there as part of the process.
Was that tough to get through? Because you don't think of animals in the courtroom. That seems counterintuitive, and I can see some stern judge saying, "Not in my courtroom, you don't."
The judges here were actually fantastic. They just made us do all the due diligence, put protocols in place before we actually did it and have legislation passed before we went into the courtrooms. They've been fantastic here in the Second Circuit. We're very, very fortunate.
Okay. And also that would mean that you had to do a little bit of effective lobbying probably on the legislative angle too, because that would, I just, knowing some of the folks at the courthouse, they're lovely people, but that just, you have a certain decorum that must be observed. And, you know, having a just all over your face chocolate lab there is just maybe not what some folks would think was the proper decorum for a courtroom.
That's true. We have special animals that go into our court program. They have to be super calm and very well behaved to go into that program.
Oh, I bet so. Well, we have, Dr. Natalie, something else that is coming up here, and that is a steadily aging population, of course. And so you can see an increasing need for the type of research you're talking about and also the kinds of programs that Heather and Stephanie are involved with moving forward. This is going to have to be more of a larger conversation than just the one that we're having here in this room now.
Right. The population of aging adults is dramatically, exponentially increasing. And the health problems of older adults, therefore, the resources needed to cope with these expanding population with health needs is a very important public health issue. And so all kinds of programs that can facilitate healthier living, programs that can help address the health needs of older adults are very important. And, you know, the one thing that we know that's essential for older adults is social contact, is social integration. And so all the ways that we can find to help older adults stay integrated in our society is important. And one tool is the use of companion animals.
And given the obvious benefits on the scale that we're hearing from Stephanie and Heather, you guys aren't going out of business anytime soon.
No way.
Well, folks, any final thoughts here before we pack it in for another version of Perspectives, another edition today? Dr. Natalie?
Well, when we think a little bit about some of the older adults who can't have companion animals because they physically can't take care of them, maybe financially, or they're too ill, I'd like to think to see Stephanie's program maybe expand some so that you might be visiting homes of people that really could benefit from a visit. People that would love to have a companion animal, had companion animals in their past, but can't physically or financially do it. So I'd like to see an expansion too.
We have visiting angels. How about visiting furballs? That is a possibility.
Visiting furballs. Love it. I love it.
Yeah, kind of like Meals on Wheels. I don't know. It could be retrievers on wheels or something like that. And anything from you guys before we say goodbye today?
Well, obviously we can expand. So Natalie would love that. So if you're interested in our program, please reach out. We have a need for animals of all types, cats especially. I mean, we would love to have more cats and some of the smaller pocket animals like rabbits, guinea pigs, and animals like that. But always, we love dogs too.
That is terrific. Stephanie Perkins, Heather Ganey from the Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare's celebrated animal therapy program. And thanks again, Chuck and Patty, for helping to make that all possible, along with Dr. Natalie Sachs-Erickson and her companion, Dr. Don Carr, who worked on that wonderful study. Thanks for coming in today on Perspectives, folks. And a reminder that Perspectives comes your way every Thursday right here on WFSU-FM. And next week, we're going to have a very fascinating program that we will invite you to join us to talk about Black history. We all know about Black Panther and all that. Let's take it a couple notches further next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.